Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's 5 minutes past the hour in Durban. Good morning and welcome to Tuesday's edition of Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, South Africa's influential Zulu king, Goodwill Zwelithini, defends himself from accusations of hate speech and calls for an end to the deadly xenophobic attacks. Following the boat tragedy in which hundreds of migrants perished in the Mediterranean, the EU president calls for an emergency meeting.
We cannot accept that hundreds of people die when trying to cross the sea to Europe. This is why I have decided to call an extraordinary European Council this Thursday.
Plus, a Nigerian lady reviving traditional techniques in making handbags. These stories and more in just a few seconds. Stay tuned.
Top story.
The king has finally spoken. Will the subjects obey? That's the question in South Africa after the influential Zulu king, Goodwill Zwelithini, called for peace and tolerance in the wake of xenophobic attacks. King Zwelithini was addressing thousands of his subjects at a stadium in Durban where the attacks first began. He described the attacks that left at least 7 people dead as vile and wrong and defended himself against claims that previous comments he made about foreigners were behind the unrest. Subri Govender reports.
The rally called by the king was attended by thousands of his supporters waving sticks and shields. They are normally referred to as Zulu warriors. The rally was also attended by national and provincial government ministers, local mayors, traditional leaders, and diplomats from neighboring countries such as Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Malawi, and Zambia. Plastered on the walls of the stadium was a slogan that read, "Stop xenophobia. We are all Africans." In his address to those gathered, King Zwelithini said he was embarking on promoting peace and to ensure that all people lived in harmony in South Africa.
This war, the war that I am waging now, is to ensure that every single foreign national must actually be secured.
The king added that it was his call that no one should be attacked and foreign nationals should be protected.
It is my call that nobody living anywhere in the town, big ones and small ones in this province, should be killed.
The leader of the Inkatha Freedom Party, Mangosuthu Buthelezi, who spoke before the king, condemned what he called these dastardly actions against people from the rest of Africa.
We as Amakhosa leaders in our nation have an undeniable responsibility to stop the violence. Regardless of why it started or what sparked the flame this time, it is our responsibility to put out the fire.
The mayor of the city of Durban, Mr. James Nkumalo, who has been working overtime with other leaders to stamp out the xenophobic attacks, told me after the rally ended that he wanted to send a message to the whole of Africa that they had the situation under control.
We are working hard to normalize the situation, to stop this violence against our foreign nationals, and therefore want to give them that assurance because we don't want to have a sour relationship with our brothers and sisters from other countries.
At the camps in Durban that have been set up as temporary shelters for the thousands of African immigrants who have been displaced, mostly Malawians, Mozambicans and Zimbabweans, I spoke to some who say they don't feel safe anymore and want to return to their home countries.
I definitely want to go back to my country. This is not a safe place. It's not the first time that we experience such a situation because we don't know. Maybe the West is coming.
No, all they are deciding to go back to Malawi. No one can say that I'm going to stay here because we have seen with our eyes our friends killed on our front. Too much, the situation is not right.
Meanwhile, President Jacob Zuma has announced that the government will embark on a national campaign to promote goodwill for foreign nationals. He reiterated that South Africans should remember that during the struggles against apartheid, it was the African countries who provided refuge to South African political leaders and combatants.
Subri Govender reporting. There has been strong and angry reactions from the African continent and beyond due to the anti-immigrant violence that has engulfed South Africa, particularly after some gruesome videos appeared on social media platforms. Among those attacked were Zambians who rely so much on South Africa for trade. Isaac Mugabe has been speaking to McDonald Chipenzi, Executive Director, Zambia Foundation for Democratic Process, who starts by explaining why Zambians go to South Africa in the first place.
Well, I mean, South Africa is the economic hub of Southern Africa. Almost everything is found in South Africa. It also it has a coastline where people, you know, cars, vehicles that are coming by ship are offloaded and they are driven by road to Zambia. So it's a link. You know that Zambia is a landlocked country. So it's a link to the sea, and it has the largest share of the trading in Southern Africa. So that is why Zambians, most of them, get their things, including clothes, merchandise. You can just imagine that even potatoes that are sold in ShopRite in Zambia is coming from South Africa. So really, it is a very big economic hub for Africa and Zambia in particular.
How deeply concerned are Zambians in Lusaka about these attacks on their compatriots?
Well, we are really concerned. As I've stated, this is a place where Zambians always go there. It is a place where, on a daily basis, you can go in South Africa in the morning and you can be back to Zambia in the afternoon. So when there are those attacks, we are also regarded as foreigners. And therefore, if we are foreigners, it becomes extremely very difficult for us to move on and do our trading well. And this is what has caused so much pain to many Zambians.
Now, is there any kind of resentment at the moment in Zambia towards South Africans living there and their businesses?
Not really, but there were demonstrations which were thwarted by the police. Actually, last Friday, most Zambians were in black to protest against the xenophobic attack on foreigners in South Africa. One of the local radio stations even suspended playing South African music on this station in protest against what is happening. There's some resentment that are coming, except that the police quickly, you know, thwarted the peaceful demonstration that Zambians wanted to stage to show the South Africans that they are not happy with what is going on.
King Zwelithini described the attacks as vile and wrong. What do you make of his statement, or let's say change of heart?
One thing that is, yes, he has made that statement, but the damage is already done. You can make that statement, you can be well covered, but if people responded to you when you say, go, you know, chase away these people, it takes time for you to be accepted and be, you know, respected of your statement. So basically, yes, he could have made that, but I think people are still very, very annoyed. Of course, to some extent, is the leadership problem that we have, inequalities. Because if the leadership were seeing those inequalities, those things could have been avoided. But we have the type of leadership that is divorced from the reality on the ground. So you find that when these things start happening, they're even wondering why they're happening like that. So really, the statement may not really make a lot of impact on the ground.
McDonald Chipenzi, Executive Director, Zambia Foundation for Democratic Process.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Welcome back. Italian police have arrested two suspected human traffickers. They are among the survivors of the migrant boat that capsized off Libya on Sunday. The UN said 800 people were killed in the Mediterranean's worst migrant disaster. Facing criticism for failure to act, EU ministers have agreed on a 10-point plan to double the resources available to the EU border surveillance mission known as Triton. The EU President Donald Tusk has called for an emergency summit on Thursday to address the crisis in the Mediterranean.
The situation in the Mediterranean is dramatic. It cannot continue like this. We cannot accept that hundreds of people die when trying to cross the sea to Europe. This is why I have decided to call an extraordinary European Council this Thursday.
DW's Sarah Stephen spoke to Sarah Tyler, communications manager for the NGO Save the Children, and started by asking her why the numbers of migrants were exceptionally high this year.
What Save the Children is seeing is increasing worsening condition in Libya. and also in countries across sub-Saharan Africa. And let's not also forget this, the conflict in Syria. So as tensions fuel, as oppression grows, and as the situation in Libya increases, we're seeing the numbers rise.
And are more people dying at sea because Italy has abandoned its Mare Nostrum search and rescue operation? Does this also come into play?
The responsibility for search and rescue is not Italy's sole responsibility, but a European Union responsibility. So what Finitrum is calling for the European leaders to convene crisis talks in the next 48 hours to restart the search and rescue operations that ended last year.
And Save the Children has spoken to people that have been rescued at sea. What did they tell you why they decided to embark on this dangerous journey in the first place?
One of the most horrific stories, and actually one that I followed up with yesterday, is a mother with her 50-month-old baby. This baby was one of the victims from a gas cylinder explosion in Libya. And this child was not given the treatment. The smugglers decided that the 23 people that were hurt were not going to get the treatment they needed. So this baby went 6 days without treatment, and 2 days were spent on a boat in open seas. So yesterday I went to see the mother and her baby, and the baby was covered, her head was covered with gauze, her two legs were covered with gauze, she had blood on her hands, and thankfully she's just beginning to eat now, so the doctors think she'll recover. But this increasing violence in Libya is something that unfortunately we're hearing more and more about.
And did they tell you what they've been promised by human traffickers?
Yes, so we've heard from children that traffickers guarantee a safe travel to a European country. Some of the children we met don't even know where they're going. So when they arrive, say the children is on the ground to meet their immediate needs. And for example, like one very small support token is that we show them a map of where they are. They don't even know they're in Italy. They don't know they've come to Lampedusa. They don't know they've come to Sicily. Some of them are coming to Europe because they've seen Germany on Facebook, and they think that that's a place they want to go to.
And how do Italian authorities find people at sea, and what happens to them once they've been rescued?
Well, there's different scenarios. Like the 17-year-old Ali I spoke to yesterday, he said he was on the boat for 2 days, and they called for emergency help, but no one could find them. So that's why it's so important to restart this search and rescue mission, which is much more efficient than what the system is now. And I must say that I was incredibly impressed with the Italian authorities yesterday. I was on the harbor when 93 migrants came in, and there was immediate support for them. They were given water, they were given food, they were taken to a shady place, they were helped into an ambulance. There was one minor who fainted when he got on when he landed at the port, and he was immediately taken to hospital.
Communications manager for the NGO Save the Children, Sarah Tyler. You're listening to Africa Link live from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany.
Africa on the move.
For this week's Africa on the Move, let me introduce you to Zainab Ashadu. She's a Nigerian woman who produces handcrafted handbags from her small workshop in Lagos. Zainab is the brains behind the Ashadu brand of designer handbags. Its modern, colorful creations use the ancient art of tanning and leather dyeing from northern Nigeria. The handbags are now competing with big international brands. Sam Olukoya visited her workshop to witness the art of traditional handbag making.
Zainab Ashadu is busy at work, using a sewing machine to stitch her finished products together. Besides the use of the sewing machine, most other aspects of her handbag production are done manually by artisans. Ashadu says her artisans, who are experts in making handbags the traditional way, are better at making handbags than industrial machines.
We allow our artisans to create bags from start to finish. So they'll cut the leather, they'll skive it, they'll cut it, they'll put it together, they'll, from beginning to end, one artisan. That is the original way of making bags. It's how it used to be done. It's not so much how it's done with by many brands on like a global scale, because it's more costly to do it that way. So it's time consuming, it's arduous, it takes a lot of manpower to create one of our bags.
The manual process of producing handbags is not just time-consuming, but difficult. Here, one of Ashadu's artisans is busy hitting leather together with a hammer so glue can stick them together. The individual attention paid to the production of each bag makes them good enough to compete with international brands. The bags sell under the brand name Zashado. The Lagos-based Polo Luxury Groups, which deals solely in international brands, is now selling Ashado's products side by side the international brands. Jennifer Obayuana is executive director of the Polo Luxury Groups.
You know, as we're perfectionists, we like to work with the very best. And the fact that we have Zashado just goes to show that we recognize her as one of the best. Internationally now, I've heard girls from China calling her, asking her for her bags. Girls in Paris asking her for them because it's an original design. That, you know, you've seen it, it's like a hexagonal shape. It's beautiful.
But beyond the beauty, many like John Bwala, who love Ashado's bags, are particularly fascinated because the materials are locally sourced, unlike many other Nigerian-made goods whose raw materials are imported.
The most important thing is that I could say largest percentage of every import is local. Yeah, and with that outcome and with the enthusiasm and all the effort they put in place to push it out of the shore of Nigeria is very commendable. So the best we can do is to make sure we patronize the product.
With huge loss in revenue following the recent drop in oil prices, the government is under pressure to encourage export-driven ventures like that of Ashado, so that the Nigerian economy can be less reliant on crude oil.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. To Somalia now, where the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has condemned an attack in northern Somalia. Seven people, including four UN staff members, were killed after a bomb apparently planted under a seat was detonated by remote control. Al-Shabaab Islamist group has claimed responsibility for the attack. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud called it a direct attack on the future of the country. To find out the motive behind the attack, Isaac Mugabe spoke to Jason Mosley from Chatham House in London.
This is not the first time the group has attacked the UN. There was a spectacular attack on the UN compound about a year ago, or more actually, in Mogadishu. And the UN and, you know, the international community that it represents is a strong backer of the federal government process in Mogadishu, but also that the government in Puntland, and, you know, even right now there's a conference going on to form an administration just south of Puntland for central Somalia. That process is what Shabaab is fighting against. So the UN represents support for its rival in the context of the Somali civil war. And then the other goal with attacking in Garoway, as opposed to most of the other attacks that Shabaab carries out, which tend to be in central or southern Somalia, is, I think, to demonstrate that Puntland isn't outside its reach.
In recent times, Al-Shabaab has lost a lot of ground and top leaders in U.S. airstrikes. How do you rate its strength at the moment?
I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind. One is that the idea that Shabaab is in a weak position is overstated usually. It has lost a lot of important towns and potential revenue from port and taxation. It's made up some of that through roadblocks and taxation. And it also still operates freely in large parts of the countryside that isn't under the control of the central government or African Union peacekeeping forces. So it's the limits to its reach are sometimes overstated. The other thing to keep in mind is that the tactics that it's using to continue to harry the federal government institutions and also the international actors in the Somali context are asymmetrical. They don't require fixed battles and large troop numbers. A handful of attackers can carry out a fantastic scale attack, like in the case of northern Kenya a few days ago, or in the case of this attack on the UN staff. It doesn't require a lot of people. So they can still have a major impact, major disruption. And they're playing a waiting game. So they don't need to win against the international community. They need to outlast the international community, is the strategy.
Jason Mosley from Chatham House in London.
Making a difference.
Much has been said and is being done for orphanages in Africa. But what about animal orphanages? That's what Making a Difference is all about this week. Let's head to Kenya, where an orphanage centre has been set up for injured and abandoned animals in the wild. This centre now attracts more than 300,000 visitors a year who bring in much-needed revenue. Part of the money is used to take care of the animals. Kenya wildlife authorities describe the orphanage as unique. That's because the animals can live under protection while in a natural environment. James Shimanyula visited the orphanage and filed this report.
Nairobi Animal Orphanage was established over 50 years ago as a protected rehabilitation place for wild animals, either orphaned, injured or abandoned animals in various parts of Kenya, including national parks. The orphanage is home to bird species such as parrots, guinea fowls and crown cranes, and more than 20 various types of animals. They include monkeys, baboons, buffaloes, leopards, hyenas, cheetahs, and kings of the jungle, lions. A visit to the orphanage is an exciting and memorable experience. The director of the orphanage, David Ndere, was kind enough to become my guide to the place where birds and animals have for many years known as home, surrounded by huge tall trees. I'm now walking to the orphanage with Mr. David Ndere, the director for this section of the Kenya Wildlife Service. We are about to enter. I can see here a post Nairobi Animal Orphanage. Our first stop was at a 12-foot-high enclosure with wire mesh fencing. As the clock ticked away shortly after noon, a huge lion was conspicuously in deep sleep.
This is a lion that was rescued in Nairobi National Park in July 2014. Lions, naturally, they spend most of their time sleeping. So that's why it's taking that rest, about 18 hours of the day resting in the wild.
Next to be seen from the fenced area were two cheetahs, whose unique characteristic behavior was summed up by the orphanage director David Ndere.
Cheetahs are normally active during the day, so you'll find them moving up and down at the enclosure.
Are there chances of animals escaping from the fenced places? I asked David Ndere.
No, they can't. They can't because the enclosure is quite high, about 8 feet high, with an overhang inside the enclosure, so the animals cannot jump out.
Shortly after seeing the cheetah from a close range for the first time, my guide David Ndere spotted hyenas pacing up and down the enclosure as if they were either looking for prey or open space to escape. And you're bringing me to lions, I'm afraid.
They can't maul us. The enclosure is quite strong. They cannot come out.
Are you sure?
Very sure.
Do we approach there?
Yes, we can approach.
Yeah, but I'm feeling a bit nervous.
No, you should not be nervous. They can't do anything to you.
I seem to be afraid of moving towards there. You're used to these situations.
James Shimanyula in the midst of wildlife in Nairobi. As always, before we go, a brief summary of our main stories. South Africa's influential Zulu king, Goodwill Zwelithini, has condemned recent xenophobic violence. Italy has arrested two human traffickers as the European Union seeks to stem the tide of migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea. And the UN has condemned an attack by Al-Shabaab, which killed four of its staff, among others. We welcome your comments, opinions and suggestions on the stories we've covered for you. Drop us a line or two on feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 491609575510. That's country code 491609575510. Join me same time tomorrow for another edition of Africa Link. And until then, I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Take care.